This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this CIO market update from LGIM. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, Howie Lee, Head of Index and ETFs, and Emil van den Heiligenberg, Head of Asset Allocation. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the pod.
Good morning, Max.
Morning, Mike.
Morning.
Well, this is our final podcast of 2022, so we're going to spend the episode looking back at the year, which many investors would rather forget, and digging into some of the key areas covered in our 2023 outlook, which has just hit the press. So, with no further ado, Sonia, what have investors learnt during this truly extraordinary year, and what themes do we expect to dominate the investment landscape next year?
Thank you, Max, and good morning, everyone. And clearly, it's this time of year where it's time to reflect, time to consider, and time to think about the next year and clearly the longer term. And it's always good to start with a step back and reflect on what has happened. And I've done it a couple of times throughout the year, but it's always worth reminding ourselves on where we came from and how we started. 2021, 10-year treasuries ended at 1.5%. We had record highs across most major equity indices. And yes, inflation was rising, but the debate was mostly focusing on transitory factors. Now, let me just recount a few of the unbelievable events that have happened this year. And I think if I'd asked anyone at the beginning of 2022 whether they would have forecasted even half of the events that we have been witnessing, I probably think the answer would have been no. So would you have thought at the start of the year that the Fed would embark on the most aggressive rate hiking cycle we've ever seen, that we would have a long-lasting and still ongoing war in Europe, that China would continue with rolling lockdowns to support its zero COVID policy, that we would have threats of nuclear war, an energy crisis, a cost of living crisis in Europe, an upcoming recession, a crypto crash, unprecedented political crisis in the UK, leading to 3 UK prime ministers and 4 UK chancellors. I think most of us probably would not have gotten even half of those events right. And it's very clear that at the core and at the center of most of the market events, at least, is the shift in inflation. And the shift in inflation clearly has been the most dominant topic in terms of the investor debate. And it's very clear that obviously, the monetary policy function in particular is directly linked to the understanding that inflationary pressures, point one, were far higher than originally anticipated and far more persistent than originally anticipated, and that the focus on the transitory items, particular goods price inflation, which was the direct consequence of the normalization and the disruption we saw in global supply chains, followed by the energy crisis, which clearly was catalyzed by the situation in Ukraine and which was another big leg upwards in headline inflationary pressures. But it's very clear that throughout 2022, the narrative and the focus really moved towards the more structural drivers of inflation. Labor market dynamics were clearly at the center of the discussion and will remain at the center of the discussion, because if we start looking forward a little bit, it's very clear that the inflationary debate will remain at the center of the investors' debate, simply because it will deliver or will determine the monetary policy reaction function and whether actually central banks have already done enough or not. I know Emil will touch on this, because markets clearly will want to understand whether peak rates are in sight or not, because if not, then volatility clearly will be a key feature of the next year. The other aspect is growth. I've mentioned a recession already. It's clearly a widely expected forecast and probably one of the most hotly debated recessions in history. But it's very clear that we will see a recession not only here in Europe, but in the US as well. It's probably worth highlighting that the drivers of the recession will differ, because the cost of living crisis and the energy crisis have a far more direct impact on European and UK consumers than it will have on US consumers. And so despite the fact that the outcome might look similar in terms of the impact, the drivers are clearly very much different. And I've mentioned zero COVID policy in China. There will be a huge focus on potential reopening and the implication this might have on global economic growth and inflationary drivers. These are in the context of markets, very, very important drivers. But investors should not underestimate the long-term events that have happened and the structural implications that are arising from this. And these are clearly geopolitics and the implication for the world order that we are potentially moving towards. And secondly, debates around climate change, because clearly energy security and the energy crisis in Europe have added a very tricky element to the climate change debate, because governments have had to balance the need for energy security with clearly their ambition to deliver against very strong net zero targets. Now, with that in mind, the balancing act for next year is in between those. And I'm not saying that just focusing on inflation and growth is an easy task, because as I've just alluded to, there will be a lot of moving elements within that debate that will dictate how well markets can do next year. But to my mind, it's the longer term structural drivers that are probably even more important to understand, because if we think about the risk and opportunity set within global markets, then clearly it might be the structural drivers that give a clue to investors where to put their money. And with that, I shall pause and hand back to you.
Well, thank you very much for that overview, Sonia. Listening to your summary, the word extraordinary really doesn't do the year justice. This is a great point to bring Emil into the conversation to unpick some of those points you've just made. Emil, how do you expect risk assets to perform in 2023, given the bleak macro outlook?
Yeah, you say bleak, Max, but I don't think the outlook is that bleak. I would characterize where we are currently and sort of the market outlook as a classical end of the cycle, albeit with very high inflation. And none of us has probably seen this very high inflation. But the good news is that there is limited evidence of asset bubbles, as we had in 2008 or in 2000. Banks are in a way better position as well. But sort of, as Sonia already indicated, central banks have been the key driver for markets, either rates markets or equity markets. And although the year has been very surprising, the ability and the willingness for central bank to act on inflation pressures has not been surprising. We have a high conviction that they will act, and they've shown that they will act as well. And that's seen by inflation expectations, which are very well contained. But then, as Sonia already indicated, next year we have a very high conviction level on a recession. And a key reason for that is because we've never, ever seen central banks reining in inflation to such an extent without a recession. So that gives us high confidence level that a recession is the key theme for 2023. But the main question then is, how does that impact markets? Is this not already in the price? And we spend lots of time on sort of trying to figure that out, and there's never a precise answer. But our models show that currently markets are pricing about 40% probability of a recession. That's very low given our outlook. And the recent rally is driven by hopes of a soft landing, which we disagree with. That means we are in a modus of selling risk assets, and risk assets is equities and credits mainly, on strength. The problem for markets and the problem for equities is on earnings. And we have a high conviction that there is an earnings correction still to come. Profit margins have been at record high. Cost pressures are everywhere, whether it's wage cost, interest rates cost, input costs. So at some point, especially when growth starts to tail off, the profit margins will be squeezed, and you will get those kitchen sink profit announcements from the CEOs sort of adjusting the market expectations on profits. And we think that adjustment can be up to 25%. And it's inconceivable to me that a 25% earnings adjustment will go through the market without an adjustment lower of equity prices as well. That is said, it's not that bleak, because we also think that 2023 will be the year when we see the bottom of the bear market. Because markets trough generally way before the economy troughs. And so therefore, somewhere in 2023, they have to sort of pick a month already, you have to be ready to sort of increase risk quite dramatically, because that early phase of a recovery, or the actually the end phase of a recession, is very often where risk premia are the highest, so the most attractive phase.
Great. So not quite as bleak then as widely anticipated, with some room for wary longer-term optimism. A quick follow-up question, Emil. Has 2022 spelled the end of the 60-40 portfolio?
Far from it, but you would not be surprised me saying that as a head of multi-asset. But clearly, falling bond prices and equity prices together in 2023, we call it the kryptonite of multi-asset. It's a reverse what we've seen in the past decades. It's nothing like a black swan. It is in proper risk models, definitely was in ours. And we also think it's not a given that it will continue going forward. And the reason for this positive correlation between bond prices and equity prices is low absolute yields levels, high inflation, and the Fed being the main driver, as I said in the previous answer as well. Much of that is now moving. Rates are now higher, so there's more two-way risk. We've seen the first signs of inflation peaking, or actually coming down, and slowly but gradually, central banks will shift their attention from retaining inflation towards growth. So growth will become a more important driver for markets in 2023 than it was in 2022, or the lack of growth, actually. That, and we've got a very high conviction, and there is a vast majority of research on this, that bonds will actually perform positive in a recession. The last 17 recessions, they've done so. So we think that 18th recession will not be an exception. The big question is then afterwards. So after you've gone through the trough of the cycle, is there then structural more inflation pressure, which would mean the correlation could go back to positive? Or are the structural headwinds which we saw in inflation in the last 5-10 years, for instance, driven by technology, are they coming back? That is very difficult to predict. Long-term inflation trends are notoriously difficult to predict. And that's there where we go back to our basic principle, prepare and don't predict. Come up with different scenarios, proper signposts, and then sort of follow through in whether one scenario becomes more likely than another, and then anticipate your portfolio towards that.
Well, thanks, Emil. That's a really interesting answer to perhaps the question for multi-asset investors this year. And let's touch on government debt later on in the call, but turn to Howie now. Howie, what do moves in investment factors this year, so things like growth and momentum, tell us about positioning by market participants into 2023?
Well, we should definitely reference some of the comments that Sonia and Emil have just made. And clearly, 2022 was a challenging year for equities all around. But on a relative basis, it was certainly a year for value and more defensive factors like minimum volatility. Now, we take a look at quality portfolios, which actually have a pretty large tech bias. They were particularly affected and had a much higher share of the negative momentum that we've experienced in this past year, referencing Emil's points around risk assets. Now, while some investors may think it's too soon to be positioning for a rebound in growth, there are also some who may be ready to position at some point, taking to the account the comments on earnings adjustments and also, you know, what the time for growth, there is an expectation that there will be a recovery in the financial markets at some point. But of course, this is all about timing. And in general, there's always a risk in individual factor timing. And, you know, a diversified multi-factor approach can help manage the cyclicality of that factor performance. But 2023 is certainly going to be a challenging year in that sense, and getting that timing right, again, worth referencing the comments that both Sonia and Emil made just now.
Thank you for that perspective on the moves underneath the headline index changes we've seen thus far this year. So a quick follow-up question for you. We've witnessed unprecedented volatility across a number of asset classes in 2022. How has market liquidity held up for our ETFs and index strategies more broadly?
Yeah, 2022, we certainly had some major events, as listed by Sonia at the start of our call there. And, you know, the best way to describe it is quite an exceptional set of circumstances. But if you look at across index and ETFs and look at perhaps the emerging markets, we've seen the removal of Russian bonds from EMD benchmarks, and equities were suspended and written down to zero. That's a pretty major change for benchmark indices. The market also had a challenging time around the volatility in UK gilts in September and October this year. But actually, on a relative basis, if we look at equity volatility, was actually down compared to the start of the pandemic, and liquidity remained actually available for all our funds. It was the volatility, perhaps in FX and rates, that at times posed more challenges. But again, fund liquidity in both our ETFs and index funds were not impacted, and investors were able to continue to subscribe and redeem in these funds and ETFs. Now, this past year really highlighted the strength and the expertise of our portfolio management and global trading teams to navigate this volatility to ensure liquidity was still accessible where possible at reasonable spreads, given the circumstances. So, you know, the impact was low, but it is something that, you know, we will need to continue to spend a lot of energy on, given the outlook for 2023.
100%. Thank you, Howie. Well, Sonia, as you mentioned earlier, energy was one of the big stories this year. How do you expect the debate around energy security and climate change to evolve in 2023?
Yeah, that clearly is a very good question. And we should highlight as well that commodities has been the only asset class with positive returns throughout 2022. So clearly very much driven by the geopolitical events. But we are very clear that we don't think it's just the geopolitical events that have led to the energy crisis in Europe. And as such, we would very much hope that the debate is moving to a more honest and more transparent stage, because it's very clear that in order to support the energy transition to successfully align with the Paris Accord, it's very clear that investment levels are by no means where they need to be. And investment levels, we are very clear, is not just the investment in renewable energy, although that area is causes concern as well, because we're currently running at roughly a third of the necessary investment in renewable energy capabilities in order to get to the capacity necessary to fulfill the 1.5 degree scenario. It is the investment in traditional energy sources as well, which currently, based on our estimates, is running around 2015 levels and probably is only half of what it should be. And again, let me be clear, this is in existing fossil fuel capabilities. This is not new fossil fuel capabilities, but it's very clear that the transition cannot be an assumption that we switch off oil and gas and switch on wind and solar. It doesn't work this way. And we've always known that the global energy system is very fragile and vulnerable to external shocks. And in that way, the geopolitical situation has really worked as a catalyst to already a situation that has been signified by underinvestment, and where it's very clear now that we have to do a lot more in order to support the transition and in order to support keeping the lights on. And I think we clearly know that there's a responsibility for the financial system to facilitate the investment in renewables, but likewise have a more open and honest debate around traditional energy sources and the role they play in the transition. We've always said as well, this is not just the financial system that can solve for this problem. It's policymakers, and it's the political debate in particular. I know that energy security now is an additional dilemma that has to be included, what already has been a very challenging political debate. But this is what I meant with a more honest debate, because we know that the investment necessary is a multiple of what is currently happening. And it's the only way how we can establish a transition pathway that is realistic in order to deliver against the 1.5 degrees. I think to us, it's one of the key structural themes that we're looking at, where we believe in terms of the opportunity set. And again, opportunity set is not just the enablers and the wind and the solar. It is the entire transition, because we believe that it requires every company to align itself to the transition in order to tackle climate change holistically.
Right, well, that's an important and nuanced case you've just outlined, Sonia, and one that we will no doubt return to next year. Turning back to you, Emil, You've already touched on equities and credit. How is the team positioning in government debt, and where else do you see opportunities next year?
Yeah, it might be quite strange given my previous answer, but we're actually just recently taken profits on our long duration call, which we have, which is in line with sort of the recession risk, which we outlined for 2023. And why? It's never an important lesson in investments. It's never only about the fundamentals. Your fundamental picture can look one way, but if everyone believes in that fundamental picture already, market prices won't adjust. And we think that positioning is already sort of quite long duration. If you look to the outlooks of many different people, which we are publishing these weeks, then everyone is almost advocating a long duration position. And the one of the fundamental reasons what we haven't seen yet is a crack in the labor market. And we think central banks will be very, very focused on whether that's happening. But we haven't seen unemployment going up enough yet. So central banks will keep doing what they're doing. And we think sort of that combination does make, for the moment, a long duration position not that attractive. But it's a quite tactical position. We expect in 2023 to actually have a long duration bias over the year and try to sort of dip in and out of that with more tactical policies. Within the bond space, within the government bond space, we think treasuries and bonds are more attractive than gilts. And gilts have a specific supply issue, which we are all well aware of since September, October. And that will come to the froth in 2023. Other things to mention in terms of where do you see opportunities? Well, first of all, I wouldn't do my own team and my own investment philosophy. I would do it a disservice if I wouldn't start with diversification. If 2022 has learned us anything, then it's diversification needs to go broader than just bonds and equities. And think about alternative asset classes, but also try to create diversification through currency as well. On a more tactical basis, we think defensive stocks are very cheap compared to cyclical stocks. So that's something to overweight in your portfolio. And we very much like emerging market debt bonds, either both in hard currency and in local currencies, because we think they will benefit, both will actually benefit from the dollar weakness. Emerging markets will generally benefit from that.
Well, thanks, Emil. And staying with the theme of diversification, which of the investment themes that we express within our ETF business are you most excited about next year?
Max, there's so much to be excited about, but I'll limit it to five. Let's take a look at 2022 and a continuation of a couple of the themes there. Indian bonds and commodities were perhaps the most exciting for us, with continued client interest, and also to extend on some of the points that Emil had said there earlier around emerging market debt. Now, the economic case for Indian bonds and its expected broad inclusion into EM debt benchmarks will continue into 2023. But also, when it comes to commodities, as Sonia had mentioned earlier, some of our clients had spotted the opportunity in broad commodities early and really benefited this year, but we continue to actually see interest in better understanding this asset class, but also to learn more how we've been enhancing this asset class by allocating to different commodities based on a multi-strategy approach in managing inefficiencies and opportunities in the commodity futures market. But let's look at more of the structural changes that are driven by themes for 2023. We continue to be excited by opportunities across our energy and resources themes, including things like battery technology, clean energy, and hydrogen. Now, given the importance of energy security across the world in the near term, but also the long-term structural transition towards renewables for energy generation and technologies required for grid and storage distribution, that is going to be a multi-year kind of excitement for us. Looking at a couple other things like the digital economy, that is not going to stop despite where we are in the kind of economic cycle. Cybersecurity will remain a very important topic and therefore an investment opportunity there. And finally, photonics is one of our newest themes, exciting given its use case for digital vision and sensing. It's recognized by the European Commission as a key enabling technology of the 21st century, and many in the digital world, tech world, see it as important as semiconductors to the next generation of digitalization.
Well, thanks for that, Howard. That's really a kind of a wealth of exciting ideas there. I should, of course, just point out that alongside all opportunities, there are also, of course, risks for investors. too. Well, look, Sonia, moving on, we've covered a lot of ground today, as we always do. What do you think the key takeaways for investors are, and is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, thank you, Max. And we have indeed covered a lot of ground, but to my mind, one takeaway of 2022 clearly is tail risks and the understanding of geopolitical risks in the global context. And although I do not expect an immediate repeat in 2023, I think investors have to be far more aware that tail risks have gone up. We are moving towards a multipolar world where clearly in economic terms, China is rivaling the US, and we will see an ongoing development to establish what the new world order will look like. Now, if you go back in history, that probably is the norm. But obviously, we've gotten accustomed to a world that was led by America post-World War II and post the end of the Cold War, which was signified by an enormous wealth creation globally. We've seen throughout the 90s and early 2000s, and obviously with the inclusion of China in the WTO, a level of globalization, global supply chains, just-in-time production, obviously access to labor, access to innovation, to products that have created a level of wealth that now in hindsight probably will look the exception rather than the norm, because we have to be prepared for the next move towards a multipolar world. Now, that is important for tail risks, because we have to assume that we're not just simply deglobalizing. If you look at the charts, then globalization has been a very smooth experience. So we have to assume that a move towards deglobalization is not just simply a reversal, but will be signified by, you know, disagreements, by potential, you know, conflicts. And that means that obviously it probably will be a step change rather than a smooth disintegration. And it will have implications for inflation. It will have implications for economic growth. It will have implications how companies have to think about their supply chain, about their production, about their positioning. And all of this are longer term structural themes, again, which will allow companies that are able to align themselves to thrive, but that are different risks to the ones we have been grappling with for the past 20, 30 years. So that is really meaningful. And alongside this, the other themes around climate change, these are global themes. And with everything I've just said, it's probably clear that the necessary level of collaboration globally to tackle climate change will be a very interesting dilemma in the context of the geopolitical situation. I think we heard both from Emil and from Howie the need, point one, to understand the situation. I know where the debate is dominated by inflation and the outlook for recession, but there's longer term themes at play that potentially can create opportunities that investors will definitely want to engage with. But likewise, what Emil has said around the exposure to government bond, for example, staying nimble and understanding the sentiment and the pricing and what is still a transition period is incredibly important. And diversification, I very much agree, is and will remain very important.
Great. Well, thank you, Sonia, for that fascinating view that I think actually goes well beyond 2023. And I use this opportunity to plug your op-ed in today's FT, where you talk about the theme of geopolitics in greater detail. Well, finally, in a festive tweak to our usual end of episode question, I'd just like to ask everyone in the room what you're planning on watching, reading or listening to over the holidays. I'll get the ball rolling and say that I am looking forward to more Walter Scott novels. He writes, he's a sort of 19th century author who writes these sort of swashbuckling historical fictions covering Scottish Highlands and Robin Hood and all sorts of other schoolboyish themes, which I tear through. So Sonia, over to you.
I'm taking a mixed approach. So in terms of books, I've just ordered the second book of Tim Marshall, which is The Power of Geography, which obviously is based on the incredibly interesting and fascinating Prisoners of Geography book. And clearly everything I've just said around geopolitics and the world, the move to a multipolar world, is very much, you know, linked to the topics he's covering there. But obviously we're approaching the holiday season. I'm a big fan of lots of the, you know, the classics that you watch over Christmas. I shall not go into too much detail which ones they are, but the family classic is The Grinch, which I love to bits, and I'm sure will come up very soon.
100%. Emil?
It's not exactly over Christmas, but I want to tease my colleagues a little bit. I'm here in the room with a Canadian and a German, and I'm very happy to say that on Friday I'm going to watch the Netherlands playing the quarterfinal football. not sure whether we are supposed to win the tournament, but at least I have that over my colleagues. And then films, I mean, Die Hard is tempting to say that's the best Christmas movie ever. But as a history buff, I actually like Joyeux Noël, which is Happy Christmas, which is about World War I soldiers which go out of the trenches and play a game of football and share presents over Christmas, which I think, yeah, given that it's based on a true story, I think it's a fascinating thing to think about that can happen in a time of despair.
Thanks, Emil. And Howie?
Okay, I mean, for me, in the spirit of Emil's diversification theme on this podcast, I will most definitely be doing some watching, some reading, and some listening. But actually, the thing that I really need to do, and I'm looking forward to, is my family had purchased for Father's Day earlier this year, 6 months ago now, a Lego, a pretty complicated set of a classic Fiat 500 or a Cinquecento. We started building it in June when we first got it, and we really need to finish it. So I'm actually just really looking forward to spending time with my son, daughter, and my wife to just finish building this Cinquecento.
Well, that sounds lovely. Well, thank you all for those recommendations. I'm sure our listeners will get involved in at least some of those over the holidays. And that's a great point on which to end this month's call. Thank you, Sonia, Emil, and Howie, for your time today. And thank you to you, our clients and listeners, for joining us. The next edition of the CIO call will be in January, when Sonia will be joined by Colin Reedy and Tim Drayson. In the meantime, you can read our 2023 CIO Outlook on our website, and you can find our latest updates via our social media channels on the LGIM blog and, of course, here on LGIM Talks.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the license corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.